Enemy Radio
number 10. I missed the last two shows just because I've been up to my arse. We had that Sylvain gig from the New York Dolls last week. And I think I was saying that the last show, I was expecting it to be a nightmare. Because I was having dreams and everything about it. Which is weird because I put on kind of bigger acts and I ran bigger gigs. And obviously in different venues all over the place. But I was expecting it to be a nightmare. It turned out to be fucking great. They were fantastic to deal with. Everybody was cool. Gary Powell, the drummer, the guy from the Libertines. And I don't know what the name of the other band is. Dirty Pretty Things or something like that. I've never heard a Libertine song in my life. But so people tell me. But he was sound absolutely bang on. Sylvain himself was fantastic. The bassist, I met him. He was a lovely fella. He looked like your man Noel Fielding. Nice fella. Everybody was cool. Their tour manager, Claire, was sound. That's bad, isn't it? I remember the tour manager's name before I remember the bassist. The bassist was kind of a quiet guy, though. Kind of kept to himself. While I was dealing with Claire for the whole night. But everything went well. I sold all the tickets. Not everybody showed up. The tickets were kind of expensive. They were like €26. And there was 80 of them sold. And not everybody showed up. In the end, I think it was, what was it? Like 65, 70 people showed up. So 10 no-shows. So it meant that I could sell tickets, spaces on the door. Now, I would have been able to fit more people down there, but I didn't want to kind of destroy people either. I didn't want to crush them in. But it was great. The guys played for fucking hour and a half. Loads of New York Doll songs and a couple of Sylvain's kind of solo bits and pieces, one or two covers. Great show, I have to say. It was good fun. Obviously, everybody knows we're in the middle of a big heat wave here. It's fucking shocking. I spent the day, well, not the day, but a good chunk of the day out in Greystones. I had the day off work today. And myself and ourselves jumped in the car. We drove out to Greystones, went out to the South Beach, which is one of the bigger beaches, I think, down that way. And I haven't been to a beach in years for kind of sunbathing and just hanging out in good weather. So we just kind of rolled the dice and picked Greystones. It was lovely out there. It was busy. I brought like swimming gear. I thought, like, oh yeah, fucking, this is great. It's been warm for 2 weeks. Maybe the water won't be too bad. Maybe I can get in and have a bit of a swim. No, fucking freezing. Absolutely freezing. There was people in there, but they were crying. I was looking at them. There was three lads trying to get it together. They were kind of knee waist deep trying to get their balls up to actually go out for a swim. They eventually done it, but it took them about 40 minutes. It was that cold in there. So anybody telling you that the water's lovely and warm is just fucking lying to you. Just testing your manhood, pretty much. I suppose the big news this week is that the NSX Festival's been cancelled. Now, I think this is one of these things. I talked about it before. I think it's supposed to be a 3 or 4 day thing. There was two days of bands, and then there was a day with like a tattoo convention and a classic car show, classic bike show, all that kind of stuff being held in Dundalk. And the headliners was it Discharge, GBH, and Curb Dog. And then there was over 100 bands from all over the country. Excuse me, I'm literally sweating. The heat in this room was shocking. I could be in the nip before the end of this. We're not over 100 bands. And I got word there. Was it yesterday? The day before yesterday. It's the 19th, by the way. It's Friday the 19th of July. And I got word, I think on Wednesday, that the whole thing had been cancelled. So I gave one of the organisers a show. Because we were supposed to be selling tickets in the Thomas House for this for the gig. And apparently he sent me a batch of tickets in the post, but they honestly never arrived. Otherwise, I would have been selling them. So I gave him a shout once I heard that they'd been cancelled, because I was booked to play two nights. I was supposed to play both of the nights. One night with Skeleton Crew, one night with 20 Bulls. And I gave him a shout saying, you know, what's the story? And he told me straight up, he said, listen, we needed 1,000 tickets to break even. And we sold about 20 across the entire country. Like, that's fucking shocking. That doesn't bode well at all, really, does it? Like, an independently run festival that can't sell more than 20 tickets, that has Discharge, GBH and Curb Dog. I mean, the last time I seen Curb Dog was in the Button Factory. Now, I know the Button Factory's not huge, but it's, what is it? How many people? It's like 500 or 600 people in the Button Factory, maybe more now, and the place is sold out. Discharge would do the same easily in the Button Factory. GBH would do the same in the Button Factory. Like, like realistically, that's like 1,500 people that should have been going to those gigs. Let's round it down to 1,000, because there might be a bit of crossover between GBH and Discharge. But then amongst the other 1,000 or 100 bands, I mean, surely each one of those was dragging some people down. And the show was supposed to be in 2 weeks' time. Like, this is the problem, that it was cancelled within 2 weeks. And one of the lads from Paranoid Visions put something on Facebook, and he might hit the nail on the head, really. He said, like, it seemed like there wasn't that much support from the bands, the promotion aspect of it, for the gig. And it's true. I mean, when you're looking on Facebook, you get to see how much time and effort people put into their gigs, and how hard people are pushing their gigs and stuff like that. And there wasn't that much stuff going on Facebook or on Twitter really about it. It was just like, get your tickets here, get your tickets here. There was nothing about the bands. The website was shockingly bad. The website had no details. Now, I'm not saying that it was doomed from the start. If people had supported it, it absolutely would have worked. But I don't think it got the support garnered from the very, very beginning from these bands. And I think it was Peter from Paranoid Vision said, like, that maybe the bands, like, kind of in the back of their head, didn't even believe it was going to happen in the first place. And to be honest with you, I mean, I'm responsible for that as well. Like, we pushed it out a little bit. We pushed it out a little bit through, like, the Skeleton Crew page, and a little bit through the Bulls page, and a little bit through the Thomas Hills page about the tickets, because we thought they were coming. But we never really nailed it, you know. We never lashed it over. I think there was a big thing that none of the bands were getting paid either. None of the local bands were getting paid. And that's fine if it's in Dublin. If it's in Dublin, it's like, you know, grand, I'm going to be in town anyway. But this was Dundalk, you know. And it was, to be fair, a bit of a distance away. So it's hard to tell how it failed and where it failed. And, like, to me, it just doesn't seem to fucking bode well for the future of Irish music. When you think about this festival, that when it was first announced, that people were like, holy shit, I can't believe it. And it looks like they actually didn't believe it. And they didn't believe it so hard that nobody pushed it, nobody advertised it, and the whole thing just fell flat on its face. I mean, they had pictures of the venue up online, and it looked like a great place. I don't know whether Dundalk is the right place to have a festival like that. I don't know whether Dublin is either, or Belfast. I just don't know. I don't know where you'd have a gig like that, to be honest with you. I mean, you're talking about kind of trying to squeeze a couple of thousand people from all over the country into one place. Is Dundalk that spot? You know, is that the place? But it's hard to tell. Like, at the same time, I mean, we've seen, like, GGI work. We've seen the Punk's Picnic, Leitrim Festival. I mean, they worked, you know. They were busy, busy, busy. So, I mean, I don't know. It's a difficult one. Another thing, the new Bigfoot show is out on iTunes. Everybody should go and download that. It's good fun. It's actually funny. I was listening to it today. I've talked about that show before. It's just the lads are funny, you know. It's always worth getting stuck into. I got my old Xbox, my original Xbox, back this week. I'd given it to a mate of mine, Peter, years ago. I actually, to be honest with you, I forgot I fucking had one. And I gave it to him. It must have been 8 years ago. I gave him this original Xbox. And I got it back off him this week. I forgot all about it. One of the lads had been talking with him, and I got it off him and dropped it off to the pub. And there was loads of games and all that I'd given him. And I hooked it up there the other day. I forgot how good that console was. It was a great fucking console. Like, graphically, it was better than the PS2. It was a big monstrosity, you know. It looked like a big fucking videotape player. But the fact, like, that I had, like, an Ethernet port in the back of it, I had a hard disk built into it. And you can do crazy shit. They've got this, it was an Xbox Media Center, where you download, like, an ISO image off the internet, burn onto a CD, throw it in the Xbox and build it up. And essentially just turns that Xbox into a media center that's connected to your network. So you can stream stuff over your network, onto your TV, from your laptop, through the Xbox. You can stream stuff from YouTube, all sorts of fucking options there. It's fucking mental. But I was having problems with my GameCube the other day. Obviously, I talked about having a GameCube before. The cable it came with was just one of those regular, what do they call it? A composite cable, which is, you know, the three kind of phono or RCA plugs, the yellow one, the red one, and the white one, stereo audio cable, and one yellow, which is the video. But apparently, when the GameCube came out, it pushes video out in a weird format. And because, like, LCD screens and flat screens were kind of new back then, this thing that really, it doesn't know what to do when you plug it into an LCD screen, so it looks really fucking shit. It's unplayable, in fact. So I ordered what's called an RGB cable, which is, it's like a, it's just a SCART cable, basically, for an Xbox. Or, sorry, for a GameCube. And apparently that's going to, it's going to fix a lot, an awful lot of problems. I ordered that off Amazon. Now, I bought a couple of things on Amazon in the last couple of weeks, mostly because they accept LaserCard as a payment. And I don't have a credit card. I'm waiting on what is it, fucking, who's my bank? AIB. They're replacing all the regular Laser cards with these Visa debit cards, which would be fantastic for ordering stuff online, but they're doing it really fucking slow. But Amazon accepts just a regular fucking Laser card, so it's handy for getting a few bits and pieces. You can probably hear that noise in the background. I don't know what it is. I'm not gonna lie to you, no idea what it is. It sounds like the shower downstairs. We got a second rabbit. We had to get a second rabbit. The Squatchy, the first rabbit, or should I say the second rabbit, because the first one died obviously 2 days later. We were just reading about it, and look, Squatchy was grand. She was getting to know us, running around, everything's fine, but apparently they do much better with it with a friend. So we went to the pet shop and we got what's called a lion head rabbit, and this thing is fucking mental. It's a big bastard of a rabbit, and it's completely white, and it's got a, they're not quite red eyes, they are albinos, but they have a weird thing. They're called rubioid whites is the name of this kind of brand of fucking rabbit. But it's a big fluffy bastard, hair fucking everywhere. The hair feels like cotton wool, like dry cotton wool. It's mental. Now that thing's just fucking running the fuck away from us. Like, it's grand with the other rabbit. The two rabbits are friends now. But if you go, we called the new rabbit because it's white and it's 40, it's called Yeti, obviously. So you've got Yeti and you've got Squatchy, and so, but Yeti just runs away. I mean, if you catch her, she's grand, she won't try and escape. But like, Squatchy comes over now for a rub, you know, she'll jump up for a rub, jump up on top of you on the sofa for a rub, and that's grand. It's great crack. But this Yeti is still climatising. But anyway, let's play a song. The band I got back into big time in the last couple of weeks, because I've been downloading these Flack albums. Nine Inch Nails. Fucking Pretty Hate Machine. It's fantastic. So I'm going to play Head Like a Hole. Fantastic track. So let's bang out Head Like a Hole. We'll come back and talk out of our holes. Yep. like a whole 9-inch nails. Yeah, I just got back into them. Listen, that stuff reminds me when I was young in secondary school. There was a guy I went to school with, a friend of mine. His name was Ivan, and him and his dad took me on a fucking boating trip on the Shannon. And I think that was the only tape or CD, whatever we had. And I remember listening to the fucking the metal show on 2FM. I think it was on Tuesday night or something like that. We were gone for a week, so we got like two metal shows in, and that was literally we had Pre-Hate Machine and Downward Spiral or Broken or something like that with us, and that's all we remember to bring. That's all we could listen to. It just reminds me of floating down the Shannon for some reason. I remember putting them in. There was like an emergency, like kind of lifeboat that was dragged behind the main boat. I remember even getting into it for the crack, just to get dragged along the boat, and I untied the knot and just let him float off, and I didn't tell his dad for about 20 minutes. And he was fucking miles behind us. It was great crack. Had to turn around and go back and get him. So I was telling somebody about this yesterday. About the time 20 Bulls were in Poland a couple of months ago. And we done three gigs over there. And there's little stories kind of attached to each gig. But the first thing to understand about going over there is the way they drive. They don't drive the way normal people drive. It's basically a race. Now, you hear people talking about, you know, different countries, about, you know, how it's mad in Egypt, and I'm sure it is. It's crazy in India. You know, I'm sure it is. Like, the worst experience of driving I had up until that point was in Italy, and they were fucking mental. But Poland fucking took the biscuit. Like, they were absolutely batshit crazy. Like, the minute you get in the car, you just make that car go as fast as it can until you get to where you're going. Like, safety is out the window. Rules of the road are out the window. It's literally every man for himself once you're in that car. And we flew over. I was working the night before, and the flight was pretty early, and I didn't go to bed. I didn't go home from work until about 3 a.m. and I think I was getting collected at 6 o'clock. I didn't go to bed. There's no point. You'd feel fucking terrible after 3 hours sleep. So I said, I'll just try and power through. I'll try and sleep on the plane. And I knew then when we landed, we'd have to, a couple of hours drive. Maybe I'll try and sleep in the drive, but it was fucking impossible. The flight, it was a Ryanair flight, so it was basically like being stuck in a fucking budgie cage. So didn't sleep during that. Got over to Poland, rented the van, got in the van, started driving. Quickly realised there was no way that I was going to sleep, because I was just in mortal fucking terror for my life. I just spent the entire trip just gripping onto the handle on the side of the car, just trying not to cry. People just overtaking articulated lorries. Basically, the deal over there, like the rural roads in particular, the city roads are obviously just normal kind of city roads, but the rural link roads, there doesn't seem to be really any motorways. All the roads are left over from World War II, when the Germans built the roads across the country. Or they elaborated on roads that were there. And they were designed basically to carry a convoy in one direction. So, obviously, when the war finished, the Polish government, when they rebuilt, they didn't really fix the roads. So the roads are still that width. It's kind of like a lane and a half. And they're full of fucking articulated lorries, giant trucks, fucking vans, cars. And they're two-way roads. So it means that, like, if a car's coming towards you, you're going to have to pinch off to the side really close to the edge. But all along the roads, they planted oak trees. And the whole idea was that, planes, spy planes overhead couldn't see the directions of convoys and couldn't see what was on the road. Obviously, back in during World War II, and these trees are still here. So it basically means you have this tiny, skinny little road with two lanes of traffic, but kind of instant death on either side of it with these giant oak trees. So if you do veer off the road, that's you fucking dead. And some of the statistics are fucking crazy. It's like there's like 100 people die every weekend from fucking car crash related fatalities, you know, like that fucking crazy numbers. I know it's a big country, but Jesus Christ, that's fucking mental. But anyway, so couldn't sleep in the van. I was told it was fucking really warm, so I brought nothing over. I just brought like a pair of fucking shorts. I didn't bring any jeans or anything. I brought a pair of shorts, I brought a vest, and I bought a couple of t-shirts and a hoodie. Because no check-in, because it was all guitars and stuff. So I just had to carry on. I got off the plane, it was fucking freezing cold, you know. Not quite snowing, but it was certainly not shorts weather. It was, if I had a jacket, you'd wear it. So the first gig was in Bialystok, which is kind of northern, or not really north, but northern enough kind of Poland. And it was Adrian, our bassist's hometown, And we played in a place called the Three Crowns. And fucking fantastic little venue. It was lovely. It had a great big outdoor area. A great stage. Everything was perfect inside. The pubs over there are weird. They generally only have kind of between one and three draft beers, taps, and then a couple of bottles, and then it's kind of vodka. It's a different situation to over here. But we got to Bielstock and met the promoter, met the other bands, all good, great crack. I went outside, was having a cigarette, and I just seen this kind of black thing in the corner, this black blur, sitting outside underneath the hedge. I was like, what the fuck is that? And I called Adrian over and I was like, man, what the fuck? What's that black thing in the corner? He goes, I don't know. And all of a sudden this black thing starts moving and comes over to us and sits under our fucking, like a picnic table. And there's this giant fucking dog. I don't know what it is, like a Polish mastiff or a Polish sheepdog or something. It's just pitch black. I thought it was a fucking bear. I nearly cried. This big monstrosity of a fucking dog. And it was like the pub's dog, you know, that they leave there. And the guy who runs the place is like, just telling us, don't go near that dog, you know, he's the security, you know, he's the bouncer. And so kind of ran back inside and I was fucking exhausted. I was freezing cold. I was so fucking tired and we were on in like 2 hours time and I was like, what the fuck am I gonna do? I said, I have to get like 2 hours sleep or else I'm literally not gonna be able to go to sleep. So I took the keys of the van and I went out and I got into the boot of the van. I opened up the boot of the van. I had like a closed off area. And I just lay there on the cold floor in the boot of the van. I moved a bit of gear around. And I just lay there. I was fucking freezing. I was just miserable. I lay there for about an hour before I decided that I wasn't going to be able to sleep. I was just too cold, miserable. My nose was starting to run. I was like, I don't want to get fucking sick. So I went back inside. I said, the only way I'm going to get through this is to get fucking smash drunk. So I just start fucking throwing loads of beer and whiskey and vodka down my throat. I got fucking destroyed drunk. Jumped on the stage. Don't really remember playing. I remember kind of, there was loads of big giant dudes there who were throwing each other around a bit. So I was trying to act fucking hard with them. So maybe they thought if I was mad, they wouldn't batter me. I didn't get battered, but it was fair enough. But at the end of the night, two of Adrian's mates came and we were staying at their houses. They kind of split us up. It was the A team and the B team. And I was put in the B team and I was sent off. Sent off to the B team's house and I was expecting a fucking shithole. But it was amazing, it was a lovely apartment. And we got in there, he had two fridges and he said, this is my fridge. And he pulled out a bottle of vodka and a couple of beers. And we were like, alright, yeah, fair enough, we're bollocks, we need to go to bed. And he went, no, you must drink, this is your fridge. Up and looped the other fridge full of vodka and beer. And we had to stay up for the whole night drinking with him. And then he had a balcony and one of the other apartment blocks kind of across the way, there was like some big fucking kind of rave or dance party happening in someone's apartment. And I'm screaming across the building, you know, fucking Irlandia, can we come over? Can we come over? And the dude whose apartment we were staying in was like, you know, you can't go over there. If you go over there, then I have to go over there. And then I'm going to have to kill somebody because they're all horrible bastards. And I woke up, went to bed eventually, and I woke up in the middle of the night and Adrian's mate was kind of standing over me, naked, rubbing himself. So I had to force myself to go back asleep. He was locked as well. I don't think he was trying to do anything. I think he might have been checking on us, but either that or if someone was getting raped. But it wasn't too pleasant. But woke up the next morning, got collected at like 10 a.m, fucking drove, I don't know, like 6-7 hours to a place called Ilavua, and we were playing this outdoor gig there. And they put us up in a little kind of hotel. It was almost like a holiday home that they put us into. And they put us into this holiday home. And like, I was sharing them with Skinny and fucking think Gav. And Gav and Ollie, I think, were sharing another one. I'm trying to think who else was there. Shay was there, but who was Shay staying with? Maybe Shay was staying with us. But anyway, fucking place got destroyed. Fucking there was complaints about fucking the smell apparently coming from Gav's apartment. And the noise of Gav snoring. The gig was great. I've seen the best knockout I ever seen in my life. Big joint Polish dude. Was getting annoyed by another Polish dude. He turned around to, I think, Skinny and said, you know, do you know him? Skinny said no. And he just hit him with this kind of open handed clatter. I just knocked him spark out. And people had to come over and put him into recovery position. He was there for like half hour, 40 minutes. Just knocked out on the floor before his mates came and got him. It was fucking amazing. I felt bad, but he was locked and annoying everybody, so whatever. Then the next day we went to a place called Suwalki, and I'm not gonna say it's a shithole, it's just a town, just like a rural kind of town. And its claim to fame is that I had a big giant Pope John Paul statue. And we played in this little biker bar. And convinced what was like a wee power fucking biker bar. For multiple reasons. But anyway, could have had to play it. We didn't really have much of a choice. I was hoping that it'd fall through because there was loads of problems at the beginning when we first got there. There was loads of, oh, we don't have this, we don't have that. I thought you were bringing a drum kit, fucking blah, blah, blah. So eventually, they got it sorted. And we played. The gig wasn't great, to be fair. It was, the sound was fucking shocking. It was, everything that could go wrong did go wrong. But the wrong crowd, it was more of a metal crowd. And they were expecting fucking, you know, hair flying everywhere and speed solos and shit like that. And that's just not us. But at the end of it, we were trying to find out where we were staying, because whoever Adrian had booked the gig with told them that we could stay in their place. So they came and they collected us, and we followed their car around to their house. And this house wasn't a house, it was a fucking mansion. It was absolutely ridiculously monstrous. And it had like marble staircases, had an indoor like full fucking swimming pool. Not like a hot tub, a full swimming pool. And then we thought it was fucking weird, because when we walked in the door, we were looking around and there was like kids' shoes and people's jackets hanging on the walls, and there was just two dudes staying there. And they said, you know, have a look in the press. If you find some food, you can eat it. Go on upstairs, find a bedroom, whatever bedroom you find, you can take, you can stay there. So we hung out with them for a while, beat a couple of beers or whatever, and went up to check out the bedrooms, and like fucking being nosy, I had a look at a couple of the drawers, because I was just smelling something wrong about this whole situation. Because we were asking them, you know, is this your house? And we're like, no, it's not your house. And we're like, okay, yeah, you know, it's your man dad's house. No, it's not my man dad's house. I was like, well, you know, who's the kids? There's kids' clothes everywhere. No, don't worry about that. So I checked some of the drawers, and there was like people's clothes there. It looked like people just disappeared. You know what I mean? Like nothing was packed up. Everything looked like it was ready to fucking roll. Like there was fresh sheets on the beds. The beds were made. Like people lived here until very recently. You know, there was nothing old there. So we went to bed anyway. And we were talking to them the next day. And we had kind of codes worked out. You know, I was like, fucking right, you know, we'll check on you in an hour, if you check on me in 2 hours, type of thing. Because we were actually a little bit worried, because it was so fucking weird. Now, the guys are really nice, but we got talking to them the next morning, and they were kind of cagey about the facts. But basically, the way they explained it was that a friend of a friend of a friend was owed money by the guy who owned this house, and the guy was put out of the house, and the friend of a friend of a friend of a friend who was owed the money took over the house, just took the house off him. And they also had, I think it was the next house over, and they were turning that into a recording studio, the basement of it into a recording studio. And it was rough and ready, the other house, but the main house was fucking amazing. So like, it turns out we stayed in like a mobster's fucking house. I'm fairly convinced that there was bodies buried in the fucking back garden or something, because there was no sign of people moving out. Like everything, there was like shit on the mantelpiece, food in the presses, and these guys weren't even living there. You know, they stayed there one or two nights a week when the band was rehearsing, and they had stuff set up in the living room and shit. Like, they weren't living there, they were just using it while this mobster mate of theirs wasn't around. Like, he wanted to have somebody there in case the original owner fucking maybe came back, or whichever reason he had. I ended up having to get a loan. I think at the second gig I had to get a loan of a pair of tracksuit bottoms off somebody, a pair of dirty old filthy tracksuit bottoms, because it was fucking freezing, it was so cold. But the gigs, I have to say, the gigs were great over there. We've been, I think, invited back. We were invited back over recently to play at like a charity thing, for a friend of a friend who has cancer, and it was apparently recently found out that it's fucking terminal, so they're not going ahead with the charity gig. But we hope to get back over there soon. The plan is to do a week or two over there. So actually, at the moment, it looks like in September I'm driving to Poland from Dublin. Myself and herself are going over to collect her dog. So we're going from we're taking the ferry from Rosslare to Cherbourg in France, and then driving from France across Belgium and Germany, and then into Poland. And apparently it's about 16 hours is the drive. I'm borrowing my father's camper van, so we're going to do that. And we're going to be gone for 2 weeks. So it's a 16-hour drive. I'm going to split that up over maybe 3 days. 3 or 4 days. I'm going to stop at a couple of places. There's a couple of record shops in Germany I want to go to, and one or two in Belgium if I can get to them. And pick up a few bits and pieces. We don't need a hotel. We don't need anything. We're going to just stock up the fucking camper van on the way. And that'll do us. You know, we'll stock it up then in Krakow, and then drive back. the ferry is like 18 hours or some shit like that. It's not going to be pleasant. So it's a long trip, and it's a driving trip. It's a working kind of fucking holiday. But it'll be fun. That's the plan. That's the plan for September. I think we're booking that tomorrow. But yeah, that's the story. Let's play another song. What are we going to play? We'll play a fucking classic punk song that's now advertising. I think it's Sainsbury's. Is it Sainsbury's? Or Tesco, one of them. It's Boredom by the Buzzcocks. And I don't know. I think John Robb from Goldblade, who were actually playing in Dublin in a couple of months, I found out recently. I'll have more details on that soon. But John Robb said he doesn't know whether Boredom by the Buzzcocks being used on a television commercial for a supermarket chain is a sign that punk is actually dead, or whether punk rock won. And that's kind of an interesting way to look at it. But this is Boredom by the Buzzcocks, and we'll be right back after this.
Ba-dum.
By the Buzzcocks. I've been watching this TV show Under the Dome recently, and I've talked about it. Listen, everything you know by now, everything I talk about, I fucking talked about before. But I kind of had reasonably good hopes for it, just because he was involved there. A guy called Brian K. Vaughan, who is a comic book writer originally, and he's really, really fucking good. He done Why the Last Man, Pride of Baghdad. He done a series called Ex Machina. He's a fantastically smart writer. He's like kind of like the American version of Mark Miller. And where lots of stuff has kind of pop culture references and stuff like that. But it's really well written. And I think he's spearheading this Under the Dome project. But then you've got like Steven Spielberg is involved. Obviously Stephen King, because it's based on a Stephen King novel. But it's not very fucking good, and it's annoying me that it's not good. And like, it's same as everything. Listen, shite in, shite out. I'm not going to say that book was fucking great. The book was all right at best. I don't know why that novel was picked to be a TV show to begin with. It's just not the most exciting thing in the world. But it's it could be better. I mean, there's the makings of a decent TV show in there somewhere, but the actors that they've picked are fucking atrocious. They're fucking atrocious. I think The Walking Dead has bad actors. This is fucking miserable. They've got like, there's two kind of kids in it. They're supposed to be like, I don't know, 14 or 15, and they're the most annoying bastards I've ever seen on television. There's one like this kind of standard, stereotypical, you know, really nice country boy, and then the stereotypical kind of spoiled brat child from the city who was passing through the town when the dome dropped, and she's stuck in there with her two lesbian mothers, and they have her fucking made up like a cheap whore, and she's got a big giant forehead, which is not made look any better by the stupid clothes they have her wearing. Like, it's fucking, it's absolutely shocking. Like, it's just, like I said, somewhere in there, there's a decent TV show, but at the moment, it's just not there. Like, it's boring. The last two or three episodes have been fucking shockingly boring. And they're trying to add in, like, a little bit of kind of crime drama and, you know, police corruption and all this kind of stuff to kind of spice it up. Because, realistically, if you went to this, any random Irish small town, you went to fucking Arklow or Shillelagh or something like that in the arsehole of nowhere and dumped an old fucking glass dome over that town, to be honest, fuck all that happened. Because there's fuck all happening there anyway. So, like, trying to make an exciting TV show out of, like, the American version of Shillelagh with a fucking glass dome around it, you know? It's like, let's drop a big dome around Gory. Like, nobody would even know, to be fair. Like, who comes and goes from Gory? Like, the people from Gory don't leave Gory. People from Shillelagh don't leave Shillelagh. Like, nobody'd even know it was fucking... All of a sudden, they'd know that, like, fucking the food in the local petrol station, like, just stopped arriving. That's it. But it's just not a very good TV show at all. Apparently, Stephen King's gone on record saying, listen, they've changed the ending, because the ending of the book is fucking terrible. The ending of the book basically is that aliens have dropped this dome as, like, an experiment for the crack, you know? And they've changed the ending, thank God, because that was fucking atrocious. But, like, they've changed the ending in a couple of King kind of movie and film and TV show kind of adaptations, like the Mist. They changed the ending of The Mist from the novella, and to be fair, the movie version ending was much better than the book version. I think if I remember correctly, the book ending is pretty much the same ending as Cloverfield, roughly, in the back of my head. I think they're pretty close. But one of the things I done last week, obviously, you know, I'm a big comic book fan, I bought the entire series of the Hellboy Library Editions. And basically what these are, they're oversized hardback collections of the Hellboy comic books. And I actually had the first two anyway, but I lost the second one. I think I gave it to somebody, or I left it in the record shop when I moved out of the record shop, some shit anyway. And but I still had the first one somewhere. So I went out and bought the rest of them. I think there's six in total. They're not cheap, they're like fucking 50, 60 quid each, but I said fuck it, I blew a couple of quid again fixing the recession personally, and I went out and I bought them all out of Big Bang Comics in Dundrum. And John's one of my oldest mates, he's a good chap, he always looks after me, so I get all my stuff off him, kind of. I just need to let him know what I want, and he'll find it, he'll dig it out for me, give me a shout when it's in there. If I'm stuck for cash, I can go in and collect that and sort them out the next week. You know, he's a good chap. Me and John go back a long way. And so I got all these library editions, and I thought I'd read all the Hellboys. Like, I obviously haven't, you know. But there's something about Hellboy. There's something about the guy who created Hellboy. His name is Mike Mignola, and he was an artist for years. He never really got involved in the writing end of things. He was just an artist for years. I'm going to take a quick stop now, because something's freaking me out. I put some ice in this water. Literally, when that song was playing, I ran down and I grabbed some ice and threw it in my water. And it's so warm that the ice has melted already. It's gone. It's just gone. The water's not even cold. If I run the cold tap for 10 minutes even, it doesn't come out cold. It's like some sort of tepid fucking tea that's coming out of my tap at the moment. It's literally lukewarm, the cold tap. So I dug out a fucking, like, a little ice tray and made ice there yesterday for this purpose. Water's not even cold. To be honest with you, it looks kind of fucking yellow, which is freaking me out. I don't give a shit. I'm too fucking warm to care. But it's not cold at all. But anyway, Mike Mignola. Mike Mignola is a comic book artist, and he kind of over the years developed this really distinctive style, and there's nobody else really does Mike Mignola as well as Mike Mignola. He's the king daddy. Nobody does anything like him. And my whole left leg is tattooed with Mike Mignola art. Actually, at the moment, I've got Batman, I've got Punisher, I've got Abe Sapien, I've got Hellboy, and a couple of other little characters. I have like a little Irish fucking fairy tattooed on there as well that he designed. And still, I got it started like 10 years ago. I still haven't finished it. I must get around to that at some stage. But Mignola sees things differently than anybody else. And he was involved, he designed all the costumes and a lot of the prop work for Bram Stoker's Dracula, that movie with Keanu Reeves and Gary Oldman. And you can kind of see it. You can see it in the armor and stuff like that he designed it. Him and Guillermo del Toro are big mates, and I'm going to talk about him now in a second as well. But Mignola just has this fucking visionary style, like he's fucking ridiculous. But he wanted to get into the creator owned end of things, and apparently at a convention like fucking 20 odd years ago, he was scribbling away, and he came up with this idea for a character called Hellboy, and it just looked like a big kind of troll with a war axe or something like that. It was just a big dumb kind of someone messing around scribbling, and over time he kind of developed it into the way we know Hellboy to look now. And you got to dig out of a guy called John Byrne writing the first series, Seed of Destruction, I think it was. You got to dig out of him, and then eventually you kind of learned enough about the writing process and how to do it to take over himself. So he's like the creative force now behind fucking almost all of the Hellboy and Hellboy related things. He might have other people actually writing the scripts for him, but I think they all sit down and make phone calls and they plot out the whole thing with Mignola. And Mignola doesn't really do art anymore. He does the covers, and he might do the odd little kind of splash page, but as a rule, he's got different guys drawing Hellboy and drawing BPRD and all these other related things. But he's got, like, there's a whole kind of universe built around Hellboy now, and it's, when you're reading these books, they're so, it's hard to tell. They're either really well researched from the folklore aspect of things. They're either really well researched from that end, or they're so well written that you don't even care that they're bullshit. Now, I'm sure there's loads of just random factoids that he read in books and Wikipedia that he's just kind of mashed into the storyline somewhere, you know? Like, seen a cool name and made up backstory, or heard a bit of backstory and made up a cool name. But, like, it's put together so well. But he literally mind-blowing. I could read that stuff forever from his point of view. And the BPRD storylines as well are fucking fantastic. The Bureau for Paranormal Research and Development, which is supposed to be kind of the team that Hellboy is with, but Hellboy leaves and goes off doing his own thing because he's sick of the BPRD. But there's a BPRD comic, which is basically how they got on without him and sub storylines. But it's fantastic. But speaking of Guillermo del Toro, who obviously made the Hellboy movies, and Mignola gave del Toro a dig out a couple of years ago with del Toro's first big kind of movie called Kronos, and he designed the poster and stuff like that. But Pacific Rim, I don't know what that noise is, it doesn't sound too healthy downstairs anyway. But I went to see Pacific Rim, and after being let down by so many movies over the last couple of years of that ilk, I didn't know what to expect. Now, I love fucking Del Toro's movies, fucking Devil's Backbone, all that stuff. I love his straight up kind of horror stuff. I love his like Pan's Labyrinth, but even Kronos, which was a bit hit or miss, like got the job done in the end. But it was so good. It's so good. It does exactly what it says on the tin. It's not overthinking anything. It's almost like a Saturday fucking morning cartoon. It's that type of thing. He has his little storyline about why these kind of monsters are coming, called the Kaiju. And he just throws you in the middle of it. There's no like, oh, we have to make these robots. Just like, yeah, we made these robots. Just get over it. These are the robots that we made, and this is how we fight the monsters. And because it throws you in at that point, that you just have to accept it. It's not like Batman where they're showing you kind of how Bruce Wayne became Batman and the reasons he done it. It's just bang, have some giant robots, and there's some fucking monsters to fight them. And I'm not big on the lead guy, the guy from Sons of Anarchy. I just don't think he's great. And But aside from that, to be honest with you, anybody could have played those parts. Idris Elba is in it, always fantastic. He's a bit stereotypical in this, like kind of the normal kind of hard arse fucking general type of guy, but he does it well. I like the way they don't use like colonel and general and stuff like that. They use like marshal and ranger. They've kind of created their own kind of vocabulary for this quasi military type of thing, because the robots kind of become the underground because the government's abandoned them. They don't think they're working, so everybody who's involved in the robots, they're called Jaegers. Everybody who's involved in the Jaegers kind of start their own privately funded fucking kind of monster killing squad as such. And it's I have to say, it's really good. Apparently the sequel's in development. They're saying that in the sequel they're going to have like half kaiju and half Jaeger, so half monster robot type of things. The little squeaky dude from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Charlie, he's in it. He hopefully gets a bigger part in the second one, because he's kind of instrumental in this movie. But it's good to see someone like him getting some shots in movies. He's a little bit typecast, but you know, he's a typecastable kind of fucking actor, to be fair. He does pretty much what he does in everything he's in. But let me see. Yeah, we're going to play another song. What the fuck are we going to play? We're going to play, because I had the Dolls, I had Sylvain Sylvain's New York Dolls in the pub the other night, I'm going to play Trash by the New York Dolls, and then we'll be back after this. There's only about 10 minutes left in the show. So if you're bored now, you're only going to get more fucking bored. So give it up, knock it off, and fuck off and do something more interesting. But this is Trash by the New York Dolls. Trash won't pick it up. Apparently in Pacific Rim they cut 1 hour of footage from the kind of final theatrical release, so I'm looking forward, that could be the first fucking DVD I've bought in years, quite possibly. Do you know what? I enjoyed it so much and it was so much fun that I would probably buy a fucking Blu-ray player just to get the Blu-ray version of it. For all those fucking crazy extras, and hopefully they'll have that like a director's cut with the extra hours footage or whatever in it. I can't recommend it enough. There's people who will say it's just stupid fun, and it is stupid fun, but when's the last time you had stupid fun in the cinema? It wasn't just a terrible fucking sequel to something, or a fucking shitty remake or something, or just some random regurgitated fucking pap. When's the last time you actually seen something? This is basically not a million miles away from like Voltron the movie, you know, if you're an 80s child. This is kind of the movie that kind of big kids like me have been waiting for years. But anyway, I got Indian food tonight, right? I love Indian food. But so fucking expensive. How can like one of the poorest countries in the world sell their food for a higher fucking premium than like Japanese food? You know what I mean? It just annoys me a little bit. I don't mind paying for like fucking quality. Don't get me wrong. The food generally, there's a couple of different restaurants I eat out of or get delivery or takeaway from. But they're fucking dear. It's fucking expensive. And Chinese is kind of, to me, is the gauge. You know what I mean? If it's like a complete meal of like whatever, your chop suey or chow mein or whatever the fuck with like rice, whichever, works out to be maybe $8.90. You know, your equivalent version of that from the Indians, like 12 or 13 quid. So, like, you can eat, two people could comfortably eat out of a Chinese quid for, or Chinese quid, a Chinese fucking takeaway for, like, say, 17, 18 quid. But the equivalent in Indian, by the time you get it all done, it's like fucking 30 quid. Like, it cost me 30 quid tonight for, like, two mains, one rice, and two naan bread and some onion bhajis. You know what I mean? Like, one portion of onion bhajis. It's like fucking €33 or something like that. And they're charging you for delivery on top of that. Like, I don't know. Anyway, it's just giving out again. What the fuck was I going to say? Something. Street Dogs are playing in a couple of weeks. I'm looking forward to that. The last time Street Dogs played, we played with them. And they were nice fellas, except the guitarist stole my fucking tuning pedal. And it's still fucking annoying me. Because I can't really afford a new tuning pedal. But the guitarist, as I said before, has been replaced by Lenny Lashley from Darkbuster. And Lenny's kind of a friend through a friend type of thing. So I'm hoping those boys are going to end up in the pub after the gig for a few gargles and we'll get to hang out a little bit. I might be able to hit them up for a fucking tuning pedal. I'm playing with Integrity in next week or the week after, I can't remember. It's in 2 weeks. Playing with Integrity in Fibbers with 20 Volt. And I have this kind of reinvigorated lust for playing in the bands. There was a year or two there, I think it was mostly down to the pub, that I was just, all my time was just being eaten up by the pub, and I was slightly better kind of situation going to the pub, where, you know, I can decide that, you know what, fucking next Thursday, next Tuesday, whatever, I'm not doing it. You know, there's two of us involved in this, fucking, I need the day off to do some fucking shit, and because of that, I've been a lot better with the band, and I've been enjoying it. And Skinny actually had a kid this morning, so congratulations to Skinny and Fiona. So while he's out, we have Glenn from Skeleton Crew filling in on drums. So I'm looking forward to playing. We've played with Glenn before. Glenn has filled in before, and he's a phenomenal drummer. He's able to just slot straight in. So I'm looking forward to playing with Integrity. I like Integrity. But I was talking to fucking Shay, a friend of mine, Shay, tonight, and he kind of hit the nail on the head that there's been so many gigs in the last couple of years that I really, really want to see, but when the time comes, I just can't be arsed. And I'm wondering if that's tying back now to this NSX festival thing that happened. Are people just lost their fucking mojo? Have they just lost? Are the venues and the fucking, is the scene that fucking stagnant that we just can't be arsed anymore? You know, like, I feel a little bit like that. Like, Negative Approach played last week, and I fucking love Negative Approach. And like, the gig started at whatever, 8:30, 9:00, and I worked until 8:00. I was in early in the pub doing the early shift. I was there from like 12:00 until 8:00. And by the time I was kind of leaving the pub, and I was like, okay, right, Negative Approach. And I got home to get changed. I just couldn't be fucking arsed, you know what I mean? And then I was like, you know what, if I make some phone calls, and maybe there's a couple of the lads going, I'll go out and have a pint with the lads, get to see a fucking shit hot fucking band, like one of the originators of fucking that hard hardcore style from Detroit. I said, you know what, I want to go and see Negative Approach. I made a few text messages, a few calls, nobody else was going. You know what I mean? I don't particularly want to go to a gig of my own. I've done it before, but it's not, you know, I feel fucking weird. But I just couldn't be arsed doing it. I just couldn't bring myself to fucking do it. And I'm hoping, I'm hoping that I'll stick around for Integrity, because like Trendy Bulls have played with so many fucking amazing bands, and Skeleton Crew too, that half the time I just go home when we're finished playing, and I just want to go home. It's because I spent so much time away from home, and I've spent so much money and so many years putting stuff into my home that I want to enjoy, whether it be like consoles and comics and books and fucking decent TVs and good stereos and records and CDs and all this stuff, and I never get to fucking enjoy it. So when the option is there to go home for a couple of hours, I fucking run straight after. I really do, you know. If someone says to me like, oh, do you want to stick around and watch Napalm Death, you know, you just played with them, I'd be like, fuck that, and go home, you know, fuck Napalm Death. But at the same time, if I wasn't playing that gig and someone said, no, I got free tickets for Napalm Death, I'd be like, yeah, savage, let's go, you know, let's fucking do it. But yet when I'm playing with them and I get to hang out and talk to the boys, I just can't, I just have to go home. I just want to go fucking home. And so I was kind of looking forward to the NSX festival, because I was going to go to Dundalk and stay there for the weekend. And the plan was to whatever, go up Friday and not come home till Monday. There was, because both bands are going, we try and get a little bit of a posse together, bring the missus up and fucking hang out. So I get to see Discharge, I get to see GBH, get to see Curb Dog, you know, three fucking great bands, and then loads of good local bands as well, and kind of not so local but Irish bands. So I was looking forward to it, but now this is fucking gone. So that's more than a mojo fucking sucked away from me. But like Shea was saying to me as well, he's the same. He just can't be arsed. Like, we didn't go and see Madball. The first time Madball played here, not the first time, but in recent years, they played here, when it was 4 or 5 years ago. I fucking love Madball. I just couldn't do it. I'm just sick of looking at the same fucking faces and the same miserable bastards at these gigs. That, like, someone of them I like and someone of them I fucking dislike, and I know it's going to be the same fucking bullshit. That you got scene hopping wankers who were fucking, got fucking last week, just went out and bought a fucking pair of skinny jeans and a flat cap, and all of a sudden they decide that they're fucking, you know, the man at the hardcore, and fucking hardcore 101 dictates that you have to listen to Madball and Sick of It All and Agnostic Front, you know what I mean? So they just start going to the gigs and just fucking wrecking it for everybody by starting a fucking circle pit at the back of the bar, you know what I mean? I can't bring myself to do it. But anyway, I'm going to stop giving out, I'm going to play one more song. What the fuck am I going to play? I've got a list of songs here and I'm picking off them. I'm slowly starting to turn the studio upstairs into an actual studio. It's covered in fucking, there's actually photos, printed photographs of the Loch Ness Monster and fucking Bigfoot and all the newspaper clippings about fucking Ohio wild men and shit on the walls now. But I've got some kind of playlists that I've been working on. I think I might have played it before, but I'm not sure. I think I wrote it down to play it, but I'm not sure if I ever got around to playing it. I'm going to play a Space Hog song called Mungo City. It's fantastic. It's great. It's kind of like a contemporary glam rock kind of song. It's fantastic. But anyway, this is Mungo City by Space Hog. And sorry I missed the last couple of shows. I have just been up to my fucking tits. I love doing the show. It's not like I'm losing interest. I love doing it. I need people to get in contact with me and give me stuff to talk about, because I write down 3 or 4 sheets worth of stuff to talk about. And like, it's gone within 20 minutes and I have to take a break and go downstairs and watch TV for a while to find out something to talk about. I've just been so busy and so fucking tired recently, I just haven't had the fucking mojo to do it. But anyway, play the song, and hopefully I'll be back Wednesday. Hopefully, there's a tiny chance, to be honest with you, tiny chance for the next couple of months I'm going to have to bring it down to 1 show a week, just because it's a little bit more manageable with my current kind of workload, and especially with the stuff with the Voodoo Lounge going on. I need to finish this comic book I'm working on as well. I need to finish that. I can't start spread myself too thin, that like stuff I'm starting I'm not finishing. That drives me fucking mental. I'm sick of doing that with my life. But anyway, here we go. Mungo City by Space Hog. I'll talk to you in a couple of days. And this has been Enemy Radio number 10. We made it. And see you after. Good luck.